Chairs Now Waiting, episode number 524, The New Housekeeper. Two Chairs Now Waiting is brought to you each week by the fine folks over at weaversdepartmentstore.com. Drop over at Weavers and check it out. It's summertime. Time for t-shirts. Get you an Aunt B's Cucumbers t-shirt. That's right. You need one of those. Head over there and check that out. Or, hey, it's baseball season. Get your Mayberry pennant banner so you can hang that thing up and show your Mayberry pride. Head over to weaversdepartmentstore.com and check it out. Two Chairs No Waiting is also brought to you each week by fine folks like executive producer of tonight's episode, Kevin Burke. Kevin Burke, he's our executive producer of episode number 524. Hello, everybody. I'm Alan Newsom, your host for Two Chairs No Waiting, your Mayberry podcast. Now, I say your Mayberry podcast, but I'm not the first Mayberry podcaster. No. That honor goes to a man named Kevin Burke. That's right. Kevin Burke, who's going to be on our show tonight with us. Kevin is the host of Burke on Mayberry. And so in this episode of the podcast, we're going to talk about The New Housekeeper. That's the name of the podcast episode. And Kevin started Burke on Mayberry about 6 months before Two Chairs No Waiting started. So he is the very first Mayberry podcaster. Matter of fact, I actually talked to Kevin at Mayberry Days in 2008 about, hey, I might try to do a podcast. And he kind of encouraged me. And, the rest is history. But he has about at least a six-month head start on me. And what we're going to hear tonight is Kevin on episode 3 of Burke on Mayberry. He has many more than that. And if you haven't heard him, you can head over to, if you go to twochairsnowaiting.com and go there at the top, you'll be able to see Burke on Mayberry is one of the selections that you can choose. You can choose Burke on Mayberry, Mayberry Bible Study, or Two Chairs No Waiting podcast. All of those are right there on the website. And Kevin has been going through and doing an episode of The Andy Griffith Show, and he kind of gives you an overview of every one of them. So his third episode of his podcast, Burke on Mayberry, was on The New Housekeeper. And Kevin agreed to let me play that for you here on our podcast, The Two Chairs No Waiting, because, I've had a sinus infection and my voice isn't all that good. So thank you to Kevin Burke, the first Mayberry podcaster, and let him take it away. Don't leave after it's over, because we have got to hear from Randy Turner, which is also related to this episode. So don't leave after Kevin kind of starts signing off and everything. I'll be back. So let's head over and hear from Kevin Burke from Burke on Mayberry.
This is Kevin Burke from the Department of Kinesiology, Leisure, and Sports Sciences at East Tennessee State University. Thanks for joining us. I appreciate all you listeners out there for Burke on Mayberry. I'm already getting some good feedback early into this podcast. I want to tell you that I really appreciate hearing from you what the Andy Griffith Show has meant to you and what things you've derived from the Andy Griffith Show, just what simply you enjoy from watching tags. A lot of the information I'm going to share with you throughout these podcasts comes from a couple of books, and some will be personal knowledge and things I've gone on websites as well. But if you want to read what I consider a somewhat academic book, and I don't mean it's only for people in academics, but it gives you a more thorough background into the making of the show with interviews with the people who are involved with the show, and really an interesting book, and it's been published and revised. It's called The Andy Griffith Show by Richard Kelly, and I'd highly recommend that book. It gives you a lot of good behind-the-scenes stuff that you might not find anywhere else. There's a lot of other good Andy Griffith Show books out there. Jim Clark, who originated the Andy Griffith Show Rerun Watchers Club, has a couple of books out there that I'd recommend. You can find all of these on the Andy Griffith Show Rerun Watchers website or Amazon, any of the other stores. But one of the books that I'm going to be utilizing is called The Definitive Andy Griffith Show Reference. And one of the reasons I like this, and it's by Dale Robson and David Fernandez, is it gives you a very good summary of the episodes and tells you who wrote them and the air dates, as well as, again, gives you some tidbits I think you're going to find interesting. Again, there are numerous other books out there related to Andy Griffith Show, and I highly recommend if you really enjoy the show, want to get a little bit more detailed information, that you maybe look into that. Which brings us to the very first Andy Griffith show. This particular show was entitled The New Housekeeper. Now, it aired on October 3rd, 1960. It's the very first episode, again, not counting the pilot, that appeared on The Danny Thomas Show, or Make Room for Daddy. But The New Housekeeper was written by Jack Ellison and Charles Stewart. It was directed by Sheldon Leonard. And many of you have watched a lot of good television recognize the name Sheldon Leonard. What happened in this episode is that Rose, Andy's housekeeper, is marrying Wilbur Pine. Now, that's not a name that you hear anymore throughout the episode, because basically that character's gone after that. But Wilbur Pine was played by Frank Ferguson. Most of you would know him better as the grocer Charlie Foley, and he's appeared in some later episodes. But again, Rose is marrying Wilbur Pine, and Opie is really upset about this. He really loved Rose and didn't want her to leave. So one of the things that he was really trying to do was to figure out a way to keep Aunt Rose around. And it's a funny opening scene in the courthouse there with Andy trying to do the ceremony. And one of the interesting things about this is one of the few times you see Andy actually serve as Justice of the Peace. You may remember on the pilot episode, he was the sheriff, Justice of the Peace, and the newspaper editor. Well, once they went to the show, you really didn't see the other two roles. He remained just the sheriff. Another thing that you'll find interesting is that Andy was, and many of the characters were, talking much more country, deep southern accents. And by the end of the first season, you'll notice that most of those accents, particularly by Andy and Barney, and even Aunt Bea, are no longer there. But in this opening episode, Andy's doing the marriage ceremony, and Opie basically keeps interrupting because he doesn't want Rose to get married. Another thing interesting I find about this episode is one of the few, maybe the only time that you hear Barney and Andy call each other cousin, because that's really not mentioned that much. And the joke is Barney saying he wanted Andy to, wanted people to be aware that Andy hired him because he was a highly skilled deputy, not because he was a cousin. But again, it's one of the few times that's mentioned. Another thing that's fun to me about this episode is Andy's trying to get Opie to kiss Aunt Bea when she arrives on the scene. And he says, give her some sugar. And I grew up in North Carolina, and I know that that's what my family and many of the people around us would say when they're trying to usually get a kid to kiss a relative, say, give them some sugar, or give me some sugar. So again, that's really a southern type of term that's used quite a bit. But anyway, Opie gets really frustrated with this situation. Aunt Bea comes to town. Andy tries to tell Opie to be open-minded, that that Aunt Bea had raised Andy when he was a child. But Opie wasn't going to have any of that. And it all came to fruition a little bit later when Opie asked for Andy's permission to run away from home. And this is a cute scene. And one of the things I like about this scene is this really starts to show how Andy's going to deal with people on these episodes. And again, this first show really established how people care about each other, and that's something that was really important to the cast and crew of the Andy Griffith Show. But anyway, Opie asks Andy's permission to run away from home. And rather than say, no, you can't, or you can't do that, Andy just sort of says, okay. And so Andy says, well, if you're going to run away from home, what you need to do is leave a note. And Opie looks really puzzled, and Andy says, what's wrong, Opie? And he says, well, I can't write, which is real humorous. So Andy sits down and writes a letter. He basically words it saying, okay, I'm running away from home, I'll never see you again, or something to that effect. And then that's when Opie realizes what he's doing could be a permanent thing, and asks Andy to rip up the letter and forget about it, that he's going to stay here because he wants to see his pa, you know, for the rest of his life. So again, a cute way in which Andy let Opie make his own decision. And again, what you find throughout the Andy Griffith Show is Andy uses reasoning and doesn't really try to force himself on other people. Helps people to make the right decisions. Another thing that I find very interesting about this episode is you can already tell Opie is an excellent actor. I've heard Don Knotts say that he felt that Ron Howard was the best child actor he's ever seen. And I'll be honest with you, I've not seen another one better than Ron Howard. There's some good ones out there and have been over the years. But again, Ron Howard's role as Opie was really just unbelievable for a young kid of that age. And you may or may not know, we'll talk about later, Ron Howard's father, Rance Howard, was on the set many times and appeared in several of the episodes. And so did Ron Howard's brother, who also appears in movies. And I've already mentioned that one other time. So again, it's a very funny episode. Later on, to try to get Opie to like Aunt Bea, Andy takes Opie and Aunt B out to hit some balls with the baseball bat, and you may remember that Aunt B holds the bat upside down, and Opie just shakes his head like she can't do this. And then they go fishing, and Aunt B's sitting on the bank with Opie and Andy, and Aunt B's holding her pole up in the air and doesn't even have her bait in the water. And Opie asks, how could she catch fish with her baits not even being in the water? And Andy tells Opie, says, oh, well, she likes the challenge of making the fish jump up out of the water to get the bait. So, again, Andy was trying to cover, and it gives, what happens is Opie basically is not going to accept Aunt B. She walks in on him on Opie saying a prayer, and Opie doesn't include Aunt B. And probably the final straw is when Opie goes in his room and realizes that his bird Dickie is missing, and Aunt B had cleaned the cage and forgot to close the door, and that pretty much was the straw that broke the camel's back. So early in the morning, Aunt B is leaving, and Andy and Aunt B are out near the truck, and they talk a little bit, and they're getting ready to go. And Opie, who had pretended he was asleep when they came in to take one last look at him, sees them through the bedroom window talking out in the yard, and realizes that he needs to give Aunt B a chance. And it's cute. He runs down to Aunt B and says, "I want her to stay. I want her to stay." And Andy says, "Well, why do you want her to stay?" And he said, "Well, Aunt B really needs Opie," is what Opie said. "So we need to teach her the important things like how to hunt frogs and how to play baseball and how to fish." And so it ends on a nice note. And you may know a lot of the television shows today have cut out these, but they would usually go to a commercial at the end of the show and come back, and there'd be a little bit more of the episode, a tag, so to speak, onto the end of the episode. And on this particular episode, I always like it when you hear Andy singing, but Andy's singing, "You get a line, I get a pole," and Opie joins in on one word there. But again, there's just one of those nice front porch scenes, which we will talk about more of why those scenes came into existence a little bit later. So again, this was the very first episode of the official Andy Griffith Show. I wanted to tell you a few things about, and we'll have these kind of notes throughout the year. I shouldn't say the year, but throughout these episodes, tell you a little bit of some of the backstage information. You know, the Andy Griffith Show was filmed in California, and many of the exterior shots were in a place called 40 Acres in Culver City. And what they had to do is be very careful to find spots that suggested that it could be in North Carolina. And again, in Richard Kelly's book, he can tell you the exact location where they shot the opening sequence to the Andy Griffith Show, where Andy and Opie's walking out to the lake, and Andy stops and picks up, Opie stops, picks up a rock and throws it in the lake. And as Opie grew throughout the years, they had to reshoot that sequence. So again, little interesting tidbit of information. If you haven't noticed this before, the Andy Griffith Show was filmed in something called one-camera comedy. What happens nowadays in many of the episodes of television, they will use three cameras and have different angles, and things can be shot in different ways. But in one-camera comedy, the Andy Griffith Show would have to redo scenes over and over. And I don't mean redo because they messed up, but they may do a scene, for example, of Barney and Andy talking, and the camera would be focusing on Andy and Andy's reaction to what Barney's saying. Well, the actors would have to do that scene over again, this time with the camera focusing on Barney and what he's saying and his reactions to what Andy's saying. And so then they would have to go back and put this together so it made logical sense. Also, because of this, you couldn't film the show in front of an audience. And again, Andy and Jack Dodson, this is all mentioned in Richard Kelly's book, talks about how they thought one-camera comedy was really the best way to film sitcoms. And again, so they would have to film a lot of things out of sequence. So if they started out by the lake, Myers Lake, for example, then went to the courthouse, and then had another scene at Myers Lake at the end of the show, they would film all the Myers Lake at one time, so they wouldn't have to pick up and go back there. So again, that tells you, you know, the actors had to pretend things had already happened that really hadn't yet when they were doing some of the filming. Again, an interesting way to look at it. Andy Griffith and some of the other characters felt that if you use three-camera comedy, that it really destroyed what was going on. Now, some people can argue with that. I'm not an expert on that, so I'm not going to argue the point there. I think Andy Griffith knows enough to know how to do things. One of the things that is talked about in the book is how utilizing not utilizing an audience they believed helped the show. You know, if you've watched Andy Griffith, you know and that there's laugh tracks used. And all you have to do is there's certain episodes that came out on DVD. I believe it's season 4 or season 3. Then, by the way, if you bought those episodes, you can go online, find information about how to get those with the laugh tracks added back in. They left the laugh tracks out. And if you watch them, you'll feel something's odd about this because you don't hear the laughter there. But again, one of the problems they felt in filming in front of an audience is you couldn't do the one-camera comedy. And you, the main thing they didn't like about that is when you have an audience there, you play to the audience. And something that may be funny to the audience may not be funny to the people who are watching at home at television. And that's a very interesting way to look at it. So the Andy Griffith Show was filmed without an audience, and they were filmed trying to think of what the viewer would like and what the viewer would enjoy. So that's something we really want to keep in mind. And you know, if you run, you know, you may not want to get that much into the production Andy Griffith Show and just sit back and enjoy, but it's something to think about. One other thing I want to mention is how the scripts came about. You know, you've always heard that Andy Griffith had a heavy hand in the scripts and making changes, but one of the things that they did that was unique is that on Thursdays, the entire company, and this means the major players in the show, cast and crew, would sit down and they would read two scripts. One script that was going to be shot next week and the one which they had examined the previous week and were getting ready to shoot. And they would throw in things and really focus on character. They didn't want to just tell a bunch of jokes. They wanted the comedy to be focused and come from the characters. And so they reworked a lot of that. And they said basically that Andy Griffith, while it was a painstaking process, really wanted to take charge and make sure that Barney would say things that Barney would say. And Barney, Don Knotts, would have a say in what he felt he should say, and so would Howard McNair and what Floyd would say. So again, it shows you that you had a whole cast and crew there who were able to work together. So once they did that on Thursday, on Friday the company would get together and they would scrutinize the script that they saw the previous week, and then they'd rehearse it on Monday and Tuesday, and then they would film it on Wednesday. So again, you know, in a filming would take long because they have to do different shots two or three different times, and there are very few errors on Andy Griffith Show, but we'll talk about later how you can tell that when they went back and edited some of this, they may have left not picked up on something. And we'll talk about that a little bit later. You can find some incongruities there with the show, but, you know, nothing major, obviously. So, again, those are a little bit of how the production of the Andy Griffith Show came about. Now, let's go with our trivia question. Again, these trivia questions aren't going to necessarily just have to do with the episode we just discussed, but they're going to talk about really any aspect of the Andy Griffith Show. And I've got a good one here that I hope you'll be able to figure out. And it's a multiple choice question. And again, I'll post the answer to my on my website at burkeonmayberry.com. The question is, why does Andy like Floyd to cut his hair before lunch? I'll say that again. Why does Andy like Floyd to cut his hair before lunch? Answer A, the shop is empty. Answer B, Floyd may have onions for lunch. Answer C, he isn't jittery from the coffee. And answer D, Floyd is awake. So again, those are your four choices. A, the shop is empty. B, Floyd may have onions for lunch. And C, he isn't jittery from coffee. D, Floyd is awake. So if you would like to take a guess at that, or have some comments or other suggestions, or want to share your memories of the Andy Griffith Show with me, please email me at burkek@etsu.edu. I appreciate you listening to Burke on Mayberry. And as they would say in Mayberry, my best to you and yours.
All right. Hey, thank you, Kevin. Thank you for doing that. Folks, he gave his email address there. It's actually Burke, B-U-R-K-E, at imayberry.com. That was an old podcast episode, so his email address was different at the time. But Burke, it's Burke at imayberry.com. So, by the way, he talked about the definitive Andy Griffith Show reference. Now, that you can get that over to Weaver's Department Store. It's a great book. It's one you'd really enjoy. I know you would. And he also obviously talked about not only talking about the imayberry.com website, which is here. He didn't mention that because he at the time was not on imayberry.com. But he talked about his Burke on Mayberry. There it is. Burke on Mayberry, his podcast website itself. You can go there and check it out. And that's where his trivia. If you look here, he's got episode trivia there on the show, and you can go and see like the actual answer for the trivia question he gave was, well, I'll go ahead and give you so you don't have to go and look, but you should go over and check out his podcast and stuff. But it's Floyd might have onions for lunch. That's his actually. That's the answer. So go check that out. Thank you, Kevin, for letting me use your podcast. The reason we did a new housekeeper, and I wanted to do that tonight, is because of Randy Turner's This Week in Mayberry History that I know you're going to enjoy. So let's go over and hear from Randy.
Welcome to This Week in Mayberry History, a report by special correspondent Randy Turner of the Gomer and Cooper Pyle Comic Book Literary Guild of the Mayberry Historical Society.
Mary Treen may not be a household name, but she has the distinction of being the first actress seen in The Andy Griffith Show. Mary was born on March the 27th, 1907 in St. Louis. Her mother was an actress in local theater, and her father an attorney. Her mother sued for divorce, but Mary's father ended up dying while Mary was still an infant. Mary was raised in the Los Angeles area after her mother moved to California and remarried. Mary began acting in school plays while attending high school. She began her professional career as a vaudeville dancer. The tall, lanky Mary teamed up with a shorter dancing partner in an act billed as Treen and Barnett, two unsophisticated Vassar co-eds. Mary was signed by Warner Brothers after being spotted in a play. Her film debut was in Surprise, a 1930 comedy short, in an uncredited role. She had a bit part in another Warner Brothers production, the musical Viennese Nights, the same year, but it was 1932 before she appeared again. She had only a single appearance in 1933 as well. Not being utilized broadly, she left Warner Brothers after 3 years and began freelancing. And beginning in 1934, her career picked up steam. She appeared in 70 more films and short subjects over the decade, often playing small comedic roles. Mary only performed during the golden age of radio once, appearing in a May 1941 episode of the radio anthology show, The Lux Radio Theater. But the 1940s saw her given the opportunity to play more memorable roles in films. In 1940, Mary was seen as a supporting player named Pat Day in the romantic drama Kitty Foyle, which was nominated for the Academy Award as Best Film, and for which star Ginger Rogers won an Oscar. In 1944, Mary appeared in the war romance I Love a Soldier, in a role written specifically for her. And in 1946, Mary played Tilly, the secretary of the building and loan in It's a Wonderful Life. Mary had appeared in more than 120 films before her television debut in a 1949 episode of the early series The Life of Riley. She returned to the small screen in the first of two appearances in The Gene Autry Show in 1952 and soon transitioned to working primarily in television. During the 1954-1955 season, Mary was a series regular in The Short-Lived Willie, about a female attorney. In 1955, she appeared with Frances Bavier, the future Aunt B, in an episode of Bavier's series It's a Great Life. She appeared in series such as The George Burns and Gracie Allen Show and The Jack Benny Program, appearing in both of those series with Herb Vigran, later to play Mayberry's bookie barber. In 1960, Mary made her first appearance in The Andy Griffith Show. In the first episode, she played Rose, Andy and Opie's previous housekeeper, who was leaving to marry, which resulted in Aunt B coming to live with them. Mary played another character in Mayberry later in the same season. She was Clara Lindsay, a supporter of Ellie Walker when Ellie ran for council. Mary was seen a third time as the woman who started the gossip chain that led to people thinking that Barney had accidentally shot himself in the chest and died. Mary did not return to the Andy Griffith Show, as she was then cast as Hilda, the maid and baby caregiver in the Joey Bishop Show. In this role, which is the one for which she is probably best known, she appeared in 67 episodes between 1962 and 1965. Mary also appeared in several Jerry Lewis and Elvis films in the early 1960s. During the 1970s, her schedule slowed, with her appearing less frequently. But she did appear in fondly remembered series, such as Happy Days and The Dukes of Hazzard. Her last appearance was in a 1983 made-for-television movie. The busy actress had not married until she was in her late 30s, and her husband passed away in 1965. After she retired, she moved in with her former vaudeville dancing partner, who was also widowed. The two lived out their retirement, performing their old vaudeville routine, Treen and Barnett, to unsophisticated Vassar co-eds for local senior citizens. Mary passed away in 1989. Well, that's it for this week. As always, thanks for listening. And remember to take Andy's advice and go out there and act like somebody.
Well, thank you, Randy. And if you want to make sure you don't miss any of Randy's great Mayberry stuff he does online, go to turnersgrade@gmail.com. Turnersgrade, send him an email there at gmail.com, and you won't miss any of the great Mayberry stuff Randy is doing online. So, folks, I want to thank Randy, and I want to thank Kevin for being a part of the podcast and just helping fill in when my voice is a little bit weak. So I want to thank you for being here with me. It's always fun to be in Mayberry with you every week. Next week, there won't be a live version of the podcast. So if you come on Monday nights, you won't find me here because the NCAA tournament is next weekend. The finals is on Monday night. So I'll be able to take another week to rest my voice, but rest assured, there will be a podcast next week. So just look for it on Tuesday nights. Normal, it comes out on Tuesday nights. So you'll still get a podcast episode. You won't miss anything other than the Monday night gathering. And feel free to gather. There just won't be a podcast. Folks, hey, I want to thank you again for being here for Mayberry. Mayberry, Burke on Mayberry. And thanks to Kevin. Go over and visit Kevin at his website. There are 142 episodes of Burke on Mayberry for you to choose from. He's gone through episodes of the Andy Griffith Show one at a time, starting at episode number 3. He actually started with episode number 2 of Burke on Mayberry, where he did the Danny Meets Andy Griffith episode, and then has gone through all the Andy Griffith Show episodes one at a time, and will eventually finish up. Kevin, he's been doing it longer than me, but not as often as me. So I passed him a few years ago as far as the quantity. That doesn't mean the quality is as good, but the quantity is good. So thanks again to Kevin. And Randy, thank you for all you do as well. Folks, I would love to hear from you. You can give me a call at 888-684-8415 and let me know what you think about the podcast, what you think about Burke on Mayberry and this week in Mayberry history. All three of us would love to hear from you. So give us a call, or you can email me at floyd@imayberry.com, or Kevin, you can email him at burke@imayberry.com, or Randy at turnersgrade@gmail.com. There you go. Three different ones you'll never remember. Folks, thanks again, and have a great Mayberry week, and we'll see you next time right here on Two Chairs. Good night.